On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So I'm excited for today's episode with Dr. Kevin Koppelson of the Breathe Institute. I would just say that it's difficult sometimes to put together these episodes where I know that there's a lot of different people at different stages of their journey listening. So there are people I hear from all the time who are, you know, have figured out that they've got some issues with having a narrow high arch palate, and they're looking at surgical options to try and address that. And so for those people, you're already going to know, you know, a lot of the terms we're using, and, you know, you'll just, you know, there's no advanced knowledge needed for you. But for some other people, you know, if you just got diagnosed and you've never heard of the kind of either the MIND technique or generally surgical palate expansion or MMA surgery, you might just want to kind of familiarize yourself. I've done a link in the show notes, and there's a lot of different links, but one of them is to a webinar that Dr. Koppelson did fairly recently. And in that webinar, he's explaining techniques that have traditionally been used for surgically assisted palate expansion and how this new MIND technique that he's pioneered differs from those other ways of doing it. And so if you have questions about that, it might help to go and watch that webinar and see what he's talking about with an actual 3D, you know, like image of what's happening. So to introduce Dr. Koppelson, there's an awful lot of me having to say maxillofacial. So we'll see if I manage it, because that's not my favorite word to say. So Dr. Kevin Koppelson is a board certified and fellowship trained oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing at the Breathe Institute in Los Angeles, California. He practices a broad range of oral and maxillofacial surgery with a focus on skeletal augmentation for the treatment of maxillofacial deformities and sleep-related breathing disorders. Dr. Koppelson has published and active in clinical research on topics involving corrective jaw surgery, sleep disorder breathing, and TMJ disorders. He graduated from both the Herman Ostrow School of Dentistry of USC with a DDS and the University of Maryland School of Medicine with an MD. So he's trained as both a dentist and a doctor. He completed a residency in oral and maxillofacial surgery at the University of Maryland and R. Adams Kiley Shock Trauma Center, serving as chief resident in his final year. He then completed a fellowship in advanced maxillofacial surgery at Houston Methodist Hospital, where he focused on the expansion and augmentation of the facial skeleton for conditions like obstructive sleep apnea. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Kevin Koppelson. So, Dr. Koppelson, thank you so much for joining me.
It's my pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
I want you to just start by explaining a bit about your background and your training, because I think you trained as a dentist and as a medical doctor. Is that right?
That's correct. So,
Okay, so maybe just explain to people a little bit about how you ended up where you
yeah,
are.
for sure. So, I'm an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. That is actually a subspecialty of dentistry. So, I first went to dental school. When I was at dental school, I kind of fell in love with oral and maxillofacial surgery. I thought, going to the operating room was cool. I saw the stuff that they were doing, and I was like, this is exciting. This is what I want to do. So I applied, got into oral surgery. I went to the University of Maryland Medical Center. Now, when you go into oral and maxillofacial surgery, there are actually two different tracks that you can go on. There's like a 4-year track, which is a non-medical degree track. You just do 4 years of surgical training, and then you come out and you can
So
theoretically.
those people start in dentist, like they start doing the dental thing and then they do another 4 years.
Correct. Yeah, it's a 4-year residency training. There's also an MD track where it's actually a 6-year training where you actually also go to medical school, get a medical degree, and then do your surgical training. So I'm a sucker for education. I kind of still miss school to this day sometimes. So for me, it was a
Same.
no-brainer. It was a no-brainer to do the longer track and get
Yeah.
my medical degree. I also felt like it would make me a better doctor overall, So for me, it was like a pretty clear choice between the two different tracks. When I was in oral surgery training, I fell in love with corrective jaw surgery. So corrective jaw surgery, also known as orthognathic surgery for sleep apnea, we call it maxillomandibular advancement or MMA surgery. That surgery to me was like the coolest thing in the world. It was immediate. It was profound. It had huge impacts on people's self-esteem, their quality of life, the way they could breathe, sleep, chew, speak, all kinds of different things, right? And it was like immediate. They would wake up, they would look better, they would feel better, they would function better. So for me, like, out of all the different surgeries we do, we trained on temporomandibular joint surgery, trauma surgery, cancer and reconstruction, obviously the dental alveolar stuff like wisdom teeth and dental implants and things like that. The corrective jaw surgery was the one that I was instantly attracted to. So I knew that, one way or another, that's kind of what I wanted to do. I actually, in residency, fell in love more so with treating people with sleep-related breathing disorders. I met Dr. Zaghi. Well, we actually kind of knew of each other, but we actually met up while I was still in my training, and we both discussed our love for people that don't know, Dr. Zaghi is my partner here at the Breathe Institute in Los Angeles. He's a
I think
Throat.
most people listening know
Yeah,
at this
most people
point,
do.
but I mean, you never
Yeah.
know. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So we actually we had a meeting while I was still in my training. We talked about our joint love for treating sleep apnea and UARS and things like that. And I told him, like, listen, this is what I want to do with my life. Like, it's my calling. And he was obviously still in his training. He was on the same path, and we're like,
But
okay, when
he's
we're
an ENT surgeon,
Is
right?
it your nose and throat?
Yep.
I'm an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. You can think of it kind of roughly as anything soft tissue goes to him, anything
Okay.
hard tissue comes to me. So I'm like a orthopedic surgeon for the face, I guess is a good way of thinking about what I do. And we're like, okay, when we're both done with our training, like let's link up and try to really help people and do research and try to stay on the cutting edge. And, I'm proud to say I think we've done a pretty good job of that so far.
And
So
you're
yeah, so
working collaboratively, right? Which I think
yeah.
is a really, it's happening some places, but it's pretty rare, really. There's a
It's
lot of people that are not,
extremely rare, right?
right, that
So
are not working
in
on cases together.
Yeah, so in like academic institutions, you're gonna have ear, nose, and throats and oral and
Yeah.
maxillofacial surgeons within the same roof, but really, how collaboratively are they working, right? It's like, okay, this goes to you, this comes to me. But me and Dr. Zaghi are literally in the same office under the same roof, running stuff by each other and discussing really complex cases and, what can you do for them? What can I do for them? And I think because of that really unique collaborative structure that we have here, we're helping a lot of people that I think otherwise might not have had the best outcomes. Because,
Yeah.
one of the things that I unfortunately get to see, one of the things I'll see is people that have failed treatment. They've been through 10 years of therapy doing XYZ, name it.
Yep.
And it's,
I talk to those people day in and day out also.
And
Yeah,
then they come
because there's
here
a
and
lot of us.
we tell them something that they've heard for the first time in 10 years. And, it's a blessing to be able to help them, but it's also sad to see someone that's been strung along for so long,
Yeah.
given false hope, spending a lot of money, and then kind of being sometimes even worse off than they were before due to certain complications that can happen. So, I'm pretty open-minded. It's not like anyone who walks through my door gets offered surgery, right? There's
Right.
people that I'm like, hey, maybe you should go try this less invasive thing. But at the end of the day, there are certain people that surgery is going to be the best thing for them and give them the highest chance of cure and
Yeah. And
hopefully
so,
live.
those people, for everybody listening, so we're going to have like a really broad range of people listening, and we're trying to hit everything for all the people. So some of the people listening, this is a brand new concept to them, that they've never heard of double, like, MMA surgery. They don't really know anything about this. For other people, they're all the way at the point of, like, they know about all the different procedures, and they've heard about this mind procedure that you're now doing, and they want to know all the nitty-gritty about that. But maybe just to kind of set the scene, do you want to talk about which kind of patients are going to be the ones that benefit from the mind technique that you're going to talk about, but also from MMA surgery? Like, there's a specific type of sleep apnea patient we're talking about. So maybe you can explain about, like, how their face and jaws developed, and a little bit about which kind of people they are.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's obviously like super intricate in terms of like actually like, doing a full clinical exam,
Right.
radiographic exam, but in general, they're treating different jaw deformities, right? And I guess deformity is a harsh word. It's just the medical word that we use.
Yes.
But people that grow and develop abnormalities in their jaw, it can happen. The jaws are actually like very complex three-dimensional objects, right? So it's not like you can have just one issue. It can be multiplicity of
Right.
issues, three-dimensional growth. So long story short, what the
And
mind
I know there's such a huge, broad range of patients that all have their individual things. So I know that we're talking in generalities here.
So I'll speak in generalities. In general, the MIND technique is a surgery that treats what we call maxillary transverse deficiency or maxillary transverse hypoplasia. For long story short, that's a upper jaw that did not grow wide enough. Okay.
Right.
So the upper jaw is actually the largest bone in your face. Whereas even as an oral healthcare provider, you get kind of coaxed into thinking that the upper jaw is kind of what you see in the mouth, the bone that houses the upper teeth, your palate, and things like that. But it's actually the largest bone in your face. It's going to dictate how wide your nasal cavity is, how wide your nasal floor is. And that actually has a huge impact on a couple things that can really affect your sleeping and your breathing. Okay, so for example, if your nasal cavity is too narrow, it can obviously be very difficult to breathe through your nose. Those patients will often be mouth breathers. You're supposed to breathe through your nose about 98% of the time. And so.
Which is why when I do a lot of these interviews, I like almost pass out because I'm like focusing so much on nasal breathing.
Well,
But
me
yeah.
too. Long story short, I need that surgery as well. I actually just did it on Dr. Zaghi
I know, I
four
can't wait to
months
ask you
ago.
about that. I saw the little video of him. It's great.
Let's definitely talk about that in a bit. So patients that have maxillary transverse hypoplasia or maxillary transverse deficiency, they'll often be mouth breathers. They'll have some nasal obstruction. The way it can also affect your sleep is a couple reasons. Number one, your tongue is supposed to sit along your palate, forward, upward, filling up the roof of your mouth. If your palate is too narrow, you will lose space for your tongue. So you'll have inefficient space for your tongue. The tongue will usually go in one place, and that is backwards. It'll narrow your oropharyngeal airway, make your airway smaller, thereby proning you to get a collapsible airway because now you're working with a smaller airway. It doesn't take as much for it to collapse, cause obstructions, right? The other way it affects your airway is when you're breathing through a narrow nasal cavity and you have increased airway resistance, it actually leads to more collapsibility of your airway. You're breathing with more turbulence.
Okay,
There's a lot
explain this, because
of
when I watched your webinar, I thought that you explained that better than I've heard anybody explain it. So there's a
Yeah.
few people out there who were talking about nasal resistance and how important it is with sleep apnea, because so many of us, nobody's even looking at your nose, right? So people are getting a diagnosis, nobody's examined their nose, they don't know whether there's a lot of resistance or a little resistance. And so kind of explain about how that can add to this whole collapsing your airway thing.
Yeah, for sure. So anytime you take a breath in, right, there's going to be a pressure to the air, right? And in general, what you don't want is a big drop in pressure when you're breathing. And if you have a big drop in pressure, you can think of it as increased negative pressure because it takes negative pressure to get a breath in, right? So you're always going to have some negative pressure. But if that drop is too severe, that's going to cause the entire airway to collapse, right? It's like, I know this is a very like crude thing, but you can imagine if I'm breathing with a lot of turbulence, things collapse, right? You can look at your external nasal valve. It's a easy and cheap way to show it to a patient, but the same thing can be happening throughout the entire airway, not just on your external nasal valve. So what we do with the MIND technique is achieve three-dimensional expansion of the entire nasal cavity volume. Thereby, like you're breathing, it's like breathing from a cocktail straw to breathing through a fire hose, right? So if you're trying to breathe, take a breath through a cocktail straw, the only way you can get that breath in is with high velocity air, lots of turbulence, and what that turbulent, fast breath of air causes is a big drop in pressure and thereby causing your airway to be more collapsible, right? So, you know, the airway in an ideal world is going to be big and not collapsible, right? So we're treating different things, right? So like when I talked about increasing space for the tongue, well, that's going to be treating airway size, right? As the tongue comes forward, the airway widens. So now you have a bigger airway. When I'm talking about, you know, three-dimensional expansion of the nasal cavity volume, there we're trying to decrease airway collapsibility. So we're targeting obstruction through different ways, right? There's different modalities that you can go about to treat airway collapsibility. One of them is make the airway bigger. The other one is change the dynamics of air movement within the airway to make it less collapsible. And so the MIND technique kind of treats both of those. We're gaining some tongue space. We're also changing the dynamics of air movement, thereby making the airway less collapsible. And that's why it's so effective.
So we're coming on to it. But I think a lot of people are a little bit confused by there's so much terminology around this, right? So maybe if you could explain, like, kind of where we were before you developed this newer technique of people are like Sarpi and Marpi and Dome, and they get really confused about the terminology. So can you just kind of explain to us, like, what kind of options there were for surgically assisted palate expansion, and then why you decided to come up with something a bit different and how it differs.
For sure. So
That's such an impossible question. You could talk about that for 2 hours, probably.
no, yeah. These are like hour-long lectures that
Yeah,
I
they
have.
are.
But
You're
it's
doing
easy
really
to,
well, though.
it's oh, thank you. It's easy to summarize. Traditional techniques were based on a surgery called a two-piece Lefort one osteotomy. So Lefort one osteotomy is, you know, I guess we'll talk about MMA surgery in a bit. That's my other passion, but that's the basically the surgery we do to break the upper jaw and move it around in MMA surgery. It's a pretty low cut, so you can think of it as not addressing the entire maxillary bone, but just the palate and the alveolar process. So it's like, you know, you can think of it as just this part of the maxillary bone, ignoring the entire bone that's going to dictate how wide the nose will be. Okay. And when I talk about nose, I'm not talking about external nose, I'm talking about internal nasal cavity wall. Okay. Because that's a question patients often ask is like, is my nose going to look wider? And the answer is no.
Because it's
It's
going to be
all
different
internal.
inside, right?
It's all internal. Yeah. So traditional surgeries were based on a Lafort-Wanosseotomy. You can Google the image for the people watching at home just to see where the cut is. But it's basically a cut that's done almost at the level of the nasal floor. And so we're doing that like nasal floor level cut. We're splitting the palate down the midline. So now you have like a two-piece Lafort-Wanosteotomy. We widen at that level. Okay. Now the difference between a Sarpi and a dome is the type of expander that you're using. So in a Sarpi, you're using a tooth-borne expander. So just an orthodontic expander attaches to the teeth. The most common one's a Hyrax. And so you do this surgery, and now you're pushing on the teeth to get the bone to expand. All right. So there's some downsides to that. Obviously, as you push on the teeth, you will get some osseous, some bone expansion, but you're going to get a lot of dental tipping, and there's side effects from that are not very beneficial, right? So the dome surgery is the same surgery. It's basically a two-piece Lafort-Wanosteotomy, except it's with the utilization of a bone-borne expander. So it's an expander where you actually have skeletal anchorage. So there's some kind of anchorage into
Sort
the bone.
of little mini screws or some
Screws.
sort of
Yeah,
device
there's so
that'll.
many different kinds out there. There's ones that utilize mini screws. There are kinds that just kind of expand, that, excuse me, attach into the palate transversely and just like press that way. Whatever it is, you're basically trying to not push on the teeth as
But
much.
those
And
are attached to bone, right?
yes, in some way, it's going to be attached to the bone. And so you're going to have a lot less of those dental alveolar side effects that you don't want to have. So I started doing, well, in my training, we did a lot of Sarpis. I came out, I started doing domes, and then I learned about this procedure called EASE, which stands for
That's
endoscopic.
also on my list, so go ahead and talk about
So
that.
which is a great surgery. And I started reading papers by Cantarella and things like that, and I got privy to the concept of true nasal maxillary expansion. So
So can
not
you
Lafort-Wanosteotomy.
explain what ease? So I've written down endoscopically assisted surgical expansion. What,
Correct.
how is that different from like dome or?
Yeah. So it's first of all, it's a lot more minimally invasive than the traditional surgery. So to do a Lafort surgery, like a Sarpi or a dome, you're talking an incision that goes from one first molar to the other, huge dissection, degloving the entire bone. And what that's going to lead to, obviously, is more pain, more swelling, more bleeding. And again, because what I'm going to be alluding to, you get worse expansion than what would be ideal, right? Because you're cutting at the level of the nasal floor, you're widening really low. You're getting some airway benefits, but it's not perfect, right? And it's a pretty big operation. Okay. So I wanted, one of my big things is minimally invasive, right? But I don't want to do minimally invasive and minimally effective, right? So at the end of the day, I'll choose a bigger operation if I get a better result. But in an ideal world, if you can have minimally invasive and maximally effective, that is like
The
that's
dream.
the best of both worlds, right? So that became kind of like my focus. I was like, can there be a minimally invasive technique that is also maximally effective? It's more effective than the traditional surgery, and it's much more minimally invasive. The recovery is 20 times better. It's something that can be done in office as opposed to in a hospital, an operating room. And that's kind of where my focus became, and that's how the MIND technique became developed. The way I kind of like led into it was I started doing the EASE procedure. I was having good results with it, but in my hands, I just felt like I could do it a little bit different. Basically, a lot of the EASE procedure is done transnasally, so you'll actually go through the nose to cut the palate. To me, a lot of the cuts I made, I wanted to do them through the mouth. So I changed the technique up. I utilized different expanders than you would use in EASE, and I'm happy to say it's going amazing. I mean, we are getting phenomenal results from these procedures. The recoveries are amazing. I mean, Most of my patients never take any narcotic pain medication.
See, that part's incredible.
Minimal swelling.
Yeah.
I did the procedure on Dr. Zaghi on a Saturday, and he was working Monday. So, I mean, that kind of, you can't get that kind of recovery from a LaFort
Yeah.
procedure. And not to mention, you know, the airway results we're getting are, you know, 10x. You know,
That's
just
awesome.
subjectively, I can tell you just from when I used to do Sarpeys and domes compared to what we're getting now with just a few millimeters of expansion, the differences the patients are feeling in their nasal breathing and their sleep, is exponential. So,
So MIND stands for minimally invasive nasomaxillary distraction.
yes.
So is it so a big difference is in the way that you're cutting. You're not doing the LaFleur thing that you talked about.
Correct. So, all those words are in there on purpose,
Okay.
right? So, it's definitely a minimally invasive technique, all right? And we're doing it through three incisions that are about half inch each. We operate through those little ports.
And this is on the roof of people's mouths, not through their nose.
Correct. Everything's through the mouth.
Okay.
So there's no scars, nothing. It's all done through these three little ports. So operating through those ports means, you know, obviously minimal amount of swelling and pain and discomfort afterwards. And nasomaxillary refers to the type of expansion you get. So instead of having that low LaFort one level expansion, where you're only expanding at the level of the nasal floor, we're getting true three-dimensional expansion of the entire nasomaxillary complex. Yeah.
So it's going not only outward side to side, it's going some forward or
So, yes, but you know, that is just a byproduct of the expansion. So, you know, we've had at this point multiple patients who had class three occlusion. That's like that typical underbite
yes.
occlusion. And when they were done expanding, they were almost in class one. And you're talking about a couple millimeters. We're not getting like 6, 7 millimeters
Right.
of forward growth. But as the bone expands, you kind of bump into the plates in the back and the jaw comes forward a couple millimeters. I also have patients now experimenting with reverse pull face masks.
Okay.
These are what we can do is add hooks to the expander, and the patient can wear a face mask that is
Yes.
pulled forward. So I've had one patient quit, and I have a patient now who's a doctor who I feel like is going to be very compliant. So I'm excited to see. I've read research on it. Theoretically, in an adult, you can get maybe 2 to 3 millimeters of forward growth using a reverse pull face
Yeah.
mask. You know, so we'll see. But yeah, so maybe 1 to 2 millimeter of forward movement, maybe not growth, but just movement as you're expanding, as things bump into each other and things get pushed forward. And maybe we can push it another 2 to 3 millimeters with really strict compliance use of a reverse pull face
Oh,
mask.
interesting. You said it's an in-office procedure. So somebody comes in and you do the initial procedure and they have like some sort of metal implanted into the roof of their mouth and then they go home and do the expanding
Correct.
it.
Yeah, exactly. So
Okay.
it can be, so I'd say I do about 50, 60% of them in office. There's
Okay.
some people that are like, listen, like I want to be like
Out.
I want an
I don't
anesthesiologist
blame those
put
people.
me out, and that's fine. That's how
Okay.
I did for Dr. Zaghi. Hopefully I'm not violating his HIPAA, but he's been sharing his story
Yeah, I
online.
think he's shared like with
Yeah.
the whole world at this point, so.
But yeah, the in-office ones, we're doing under IV sedation. I'm as an oral maxillofacial surgeon, we have a general anesthesia permit,
Okay.
so I can do procedures in office by myself and start an IV, get patients sedated, do the procedure in office. I've had some patients that I guess we can call them brave souls that did it totally just under local anesthesia, and those went great. So it can be in office, either under local anesthesia, under IV sedation, or under general anesthesia at a surgery center at a hospital. So
Okay,
it's like
right on. So
50-50.
lots of, and so then after that, so what's happening in the roof of their mouth? So there's, They're
Palate's
basically
not cut, so
this,
they're
the palate's not cut with this.
no, so
Okay.
you won't have any cuts on the palate itself. You will have an expander that is
Okay.
installed on the roof of the mouth, and then obviously three incisions spread out through the mouth.
So
So
does it get to a point where that so I had somebody else on that did a Sarpi thing, like I think it was MSE was the type of thing, and she was explaining like she didn't have an incision along the palatal suture either, but when she got to a certain point, it kind of like almost like cracks like overnight or something. So is
Yeah.
that kind of what happens?
No.
No.
So with my surgery, you're already split. So there's no question of like turning, hoping things crack, hope
Oh.
more importantly, hoping they crack and split in the right way symmetrically.
Right.
I guess, I the type of patients I see the worst of everything. I see patients come in that have done things in a way that have led to outcomes. So that's kind of what led me to modify things in a certain way. There's certain
Yeah.
complications that can happen in adults. Obviously not super often, but they can happen when you don't have surgical assisting.
Yes.
I think surgical assist for these type of procedures, they just lead to a lot smoother of a expansion, more
Yeah.
symmetric, less chance of having your nasal septum kind of get super deviated by following one half of the upper jaw.
Yes.
No, so with my surgery, you're already split. So by the time the surgery
Okay.
is done, you have a diastema like this, right? And then
Okay.
I close you back up after the surgery. We wait a week and then we start turning again. But you're already split. Everything is symmetric, smooth.
Okay, that's what I wasn't understanding. Okay, so that's already done,
You're already split. Yeah.
and then the person goes home and they are turning
We wait,
to expand it.
we wait a week, around a
Okay.
week. The reason is, for the last letter of mine is distraction. It stands for distraction
Right.
osteogenesis, which is a phenomenon where we take advantage of the bone healing properties that humans have. Okay, so let's say you get a fracture in your arm, right? You wear a cast. After a week, you're going to develop something called a callus between the two halves of the fracture. And then over time, that callus will, turn into hard bone, and you can remove your cast. So what we do, we're basically creating a fracture in the palate, right? So the reason we wait a week is we close everything back up, and we allow those two halves of the fracture to create a callus, and then we take advantage of one of the properties of that callus, which is its ability to stretch. So we wait a week, then the patient will start turning at home every
Okay.
day. And so they slowly expand. They're stretching the callus out. And then when we get to our goal expansion, we stop expanding. And now that stretched callus is going to turn into bone. So that's kind
So
of how.
I got a ton of different questions from people. And so that was one of the things that somebody asked was, how do know how far they should expand, or like, how do you know when to stop? And my answer would be, because it's not your first time doing this, and like, you kind of would be an expert in it and would know, but I don't know. Is there a particular, like range and for certain people or
So obviously it's patient by patient. There's some limiting factors, right? So like let's say my goal for every adult is 38 to 42 millimeter intermolar width. Okay. Now you may be limited to getting to there by orthodontic reasons. For example, let's say your lower jaw is also kind of narrow, right? And so the orthodontist won't have room to upright the lower molars enough to get you in a good final occlusion. That can be a limiting factor to how much we can
got
expand
it.
you, right? So in cases like that, we will sometimes do an additional procedure on the lower jaw called SFOT. It stands for surgically facilitated orthodontic therapy. And that's a procedure where we'll actually create osteotomies. We'll cut between the roots of all the lower teeth. We can add bone on the outside, and that'll give the orthodontist more space to translate the lower molars out so that
So
at
that
the
the
end.
bite can work.
So
Yeah.
my, at the end of the day, I'm not just treating someone's airway. right? I want to make sure that they are happy, you know, all the way around. They have a good bite. They look good. They feel good. They sleep good. They breathe good. It's not like I don't want to just like expand someone. Okay, you're at 40 millimeters, and now
Right.
they don't have a functioning bite,
Right.
right? So at the end of the day, like, our goal is to make everything match up the way they look, the way they feel, because and so we'll sometimes have to do additional procedures on the lower jaw. Now, that's not often. Most people that we see that have maxillary transverse hypoplasia, they have buccally inclined maxillary molars, lingually inclined mandibular molars. So there's
Yes.
lots of space to like upright those lower molars
Yes.
and plenty of space to widen the upper jaw ortho. So what we're doing in those cases is orthopedically or skeletally expanding the upper jaw and then orthodontically expanding the lower jaw
Got
together.
it. And so the person finishes doing however much expansion, like adjustments to their device at home, and then do they come? I'm assuming they're coming for checkups the whole time, but then do they come back and have that removed? Is that
Six
kind of like
months.
the, okay.
Yeah. So it takes about 6 months for not just bone to fill in, but for the bone to become strong enough not to
Sturdy,
relapse.
yeah.
Yeah. So
Okay.
it would be a shame to go through all that, move the appliance too soon, and then have relapse. So it's about a 6 month wait, but during that time, you're doing ortho, closing up the diastema. So it's
Yeah.
not like 6 months of like doing nothing. It's 6 months of you're in ortho, your bite's looking better, functioning better,
Yeah.
but we're just keeping those bone, those mini implants in place to you know, cast the bone, you know, like a cast in the mouth,
Yes.
holding the bone where we moved it to enough for bone to fill in.
This episode of Sleep Apnea Stories is sponsored by BetterHelp. How well we look after our mind really affects how we experience life. Therapy has been so helpful to me since I was diagnosed with sleep apnea. It helped me to work through the feelings I had about going undiagnosed for so long. It also helped me to adjust to living with a chronic condition. One of the best things about starting my podcast has been realizing I'm not alone in coping with mental health issues along with sleep apnea. Speaking to a professional therapist has helped me enormously to manage my anxiety and depression. BetterHelp is online therapy and it's much more affordable than in-person sessions. You can get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Emma. That's betterhelp.com/Emma. I know that you said you're looking at the entire patient and everything going on with them, but for people who are primarily doing this because they want to see improvements in their sleep, how quickly do patients kind of notice those changes in nasal breathing and that they're able to sleep better?
Yeah, great question. I am even surprised by this, but night one. Okay, so
Yeah.
basically everybody I do mind on, you know, I check on them that night or you know the next day. I'll give them a call. How you doing? Did you get all your medications and you know all that stuff? And everyone's like, Doc, like, is this normal? I'm already breathing a little bit better through my nose, and I'm like, yeah, I mean. I used to say like, no, maybe it's like placebo or
Yeah.
something. When enough people tell you that, you're like, okay, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
So what I think it is, like I told you, during the surgery, we expand them and then close them back up. So what I'm thinking is just that stretching from the surgery gets things to start moving, removes cranial strain, and gets people breathing better.
Yeah.
But you know, like for full effect, let's say it takes like, you know, it's obviously like it's exponential, right? So each day it's going to get better and better and better. It's not like something where you have to wait the 6 months to have the
Right.
improvement. Like, as you're expanding, you're gonna progressively breathe better and better and progressively sleep better and better. So it's, week one, you're having some improvements, week two, even more, week three, even more, week four, even more. And then, then we wait 6 months. So.
Right on. Can you talk me through a little bit about how did that conversation come up with Dr. Zaghi? Like, did he just say, "Hey, I think I want to try this out," or like, because I would imagine that's like a whole bunch of pressure.
So,
Yeah.
couple reasons. So, he's failed expansion multiple times. He's had the MSE, and it didn't work out for him.
Yeah.
Had to get it removed. He tried orthodontic expansion, where you just use Invisalign or braces just to widen out the dental arch. Again, that's not really treating an underlying issue. It's just kind of masking it orthodontically. You can think of it as camouflaging. And we're in the same office. So, day after day, he's seeing patients come in, like, talking about their experience and how the mind surgery, like, drastically changed the way they sleep, the way they feel. I mean, the stuff that you hear from patients is really, really awesome. Like, I have the best job, like, getting to hear patients that have been suffering for so long say, like, I'm sleeping normal for the first time in 20 years. I'm off my ADD medication. I'm off my anxiety medication. I'm off my depression medication. My posture's changed. That's
So was
something. But long story short, like, he was just seeing patients come in every day, with, massive improvements in their quality of life. And he's like, "Hey,
yeah,
man, I need you to do this on
they
me."
wanted to get on board.
So I was like,
That's
"It'd be my
awesome.
honor and privilege." And there's definitely a little bit of anxiety,
Yeah, I bet you
operating on
ate your
someone.
Wheeze that morning.
But, thank God it went well. And actually, I felt like I was repaying him a favor. He did a septoplasty on me the following
Nice.
November, so, or the previous November. So now we both operated on each other. So
I love
that's a
it.
big sign of trust.
So another one of the questions somebody asked was, are you planning any future improvements to the procedure? Like they were saying, such as a new expander, or you're just going to stick with what you're doing and see what's
No,
going?
I'm always open-minded, right? If there's a better tool out there, something, I mean, I'm obviously more than happy to use it. I have been constantly tweaking the procedure. It's not like I'm doing it the same today as I was 2, 3 years ago. Very different, in fact. The way it is right now, it's working amazing. So as of right now, I'm not actively looking to tweak anything. I haven't had anyone fail, big burly man, any female, like, within the last 2 years. No one's not split. So in that regard, not actively looking to change anything. But that being
But
said,
you're open to developing
my
it.
finger's on the pulse, right? So
Right on.
I'm always thinking, I'm always looking, and brainstorming. And if I see something, I'm like, "Ooh, that could maybe tweak."
For people listening, you're the only one offering this specific, so procedure. So are you planning on teaching other surgeons so there can be other people around the country and the world doing it?
That is my plan.
Okay.
We're working on research right now, to show. We know how effective it is just seeing patients come in day in, day out. Now we need to put numbers to it, right?
Right.
So, once I publish on it and I get that, that first paper out that talks about it in a scientific journal, right now I lecture on it quite a bit,
Yeah.
but at that point, then I think it's appropriate to start teaching it. Right now, to teach something that I'm just doing myself that hasn't been published yet is
Yeah.
probably not
And
appropriate.
so what kind of time frame are you looking at for that? Like, do you have Are you
Probably like 12
collecting data
months. Oh
already,
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
okay, all right, so quite
So
soon, really.
we just started. We're doing, pre and post-op sleep studies. Also pre and post-op, or not pre and post-op, but we're doing pain diaries.
Right.
Because, again, I told you, like, no one's, some people take narcotics, but a lot of people are not. Like, they're just like, it's like a
I
four and
mean,
not
I've
a
got to
five.
tell you, like, that just seems astonishing to me. Like, it just seems like it would be really painful, but
It's
no.
not. No. It's like literally like patients are like, I didn't take anything. Is that okay? Do I have to take it? I'm like, no, you don't have to take pain medication. I mean, take your antibiotics, but you don't have to take pain. But yeah, I mean, obviously pain is a, you know, subjective thing. You know, one man's four is another man's 10. But in general, pretty remarkable low pain scores, and big chunk of people take nothing or take very little pain medication at
So I
all.
could like seriously talk to you for 3 hours, but we're gonna move on to, I want you to talk a little bit about MMA surgery. Which patients, do you kind of do the mind procedure and some people still need MMA? What, like what are the reasons that somebody might need that surgery versus the mind technique?
Absolutely. Great question. So MMA surgery is stands for maxillomandibular advancement surgery. It's a surgery where we're operating on both the upper and the lower jaw, and moving things forward, doing stuff with orientation. So you can think of it as not just forward, but we can basically we have total, complete three-dimensional control of both jaws, right? So you can think of movements as translational, right? Forward, side, up, down, and then orientational, pitch, rolling, yaw. Okay. And with that control, we can do really remarkable things for patients that have sleep apnea, that have bad bites, they have, you know, crooked jaws. You name the issue, we can treat it with extreme 3D precision. So for sleep apnea, for example, we're generally going to be advancing the jaw. So the jaws will be coming forward. So you can think of that as treating patients that have had, they have retrognathic or retruded jaws, right? So as the jaws grow forward, the jaws are basically the gateway to the airway. They affect how big the airway is going to be. It also affects collapsibility. But as the jaws get stunted in their forward growth, all those soft tissue structures that are going to dictate how big your airway is going to be, the palate, the tongue, are going to also fall back, thereby narrowing your airway.
And is
So
that something? So I've heard like a couple of sleep specialists talking and saying, just from like looking at a person's face, well, you don't need double jaw surgery because look, your chin isn't really far back or whatever. But this is something that you would really need to have a scan of your airway to determine, right?
Not just a scan of your airway, but a CT or a CBCT scan of your entire maxillofacial structures. Because off of that, right, when I see a patient for consult for jaw surgery or MMA surgery, I am taking dozens of clinical measurements. Okay, so if you see my consultation summaries, there's literally dozens of physical measurements that I'm taking with like a Bowlie gauge. And then dozens of measurements we're taking on a CT scan, angles from the skull to the upper jaw, angles from the jaws to each
So
other.
slight tangent, but it's relevant. So tell us a little bit about, you did a paper on CBCT scans, and because I think a lot of people were having a tough time because depending on the how the person's standing, or there wasn't a lot of uniformity between CBCT scans, but you were like, I didn't really understand it, but you came up with an angle
Yes.
that is the same between no matter which scan you look at. Can you explain it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dr. Zaghi and I just published a paper. I think it got published in the June issue of the Journal and Oral, the Journal of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery, which is the big journal in my field. Basically, just like I said, we take measurements to understand jaw growth and things like that. One of the things we know as sleep apnea doctors, right, people that treat airway issues, is that forward head posture is a common compensation for a small airway. All right. Subconscious will always choose airway and breathing over long-term durability of the body, right? That's why people clench and grind at night. That's why people have forward head posture. These are
Kids'
little
thumbs suck to
compensations.
try and,
Yeah. You name it, right? You'll come up with these whatever compensation to make the airway a little bit better. So we knew that that was a thing, All right. But that was not something that people were looking at when evaluating CBCT scans. Okay. Because if we know that having a forward head posture is a common compensation, first of all, how big of an effect does it have? And that's one of the things we were able to show with the angle we came up with is called the NBC3 angle. It stands for nasion to basion, which are supplementary points to the upper anterior point of your third cervical vertebrae. So based on this angle, we're able to detect cranial cervical extension and flexion. Okay. And what we were able to do is, first of all, come up with a number that what is a normal NBC3 angle? What is considered extended or flexed from that angle? And then how big of a change each 5 degree change off of an ideal NBC3 angle can have on your airway. And
So
it is
interesting.
profound. So each 5 degree change has a 25% effect on your airway size.
Wow.
Each 5 degree, you can have either a 25% increase or decrease in the size of your airway just by a 5 degree shift. So that's why patients do it. And why is that important? Well, number one, we're proving something that we all know. Now we're able to quantify it. And also, as providers, we can use it to reliably compare two CBCT scans. So if in one scan the patient has an NBC3 angle of 110 and the other one they have one of 130, then you're not comparing apples to apples, right?
Got it.
So you're like, oh, look, I made their airway better with this appliance, but in the second scan
Yes.
they have forward head posture, right? Then it's a falsely a positive result, right? So
Yes.
that's what the paper shows.
Okay, we're gonna link to that paper so if people want to go down that rabbit hole, they can. But so the back to the MMA surgery. So people come and you, what is it? Is it just going to be more extremely compromised airways you're going to recommend MMA versus
So
mind, or how do you decide
I
that?
like to think of myself as a sniper. Okay.
Oh.
So I think there's some people that anyone walks in the door, they get MMA surgery, right?
Oh,
So
totally. It's the
what
whole like you have a hammer, so everything's a nail, right? Like, I mean, I feel
Correct.
like with
Correct.
sleep apnea, that's absolutely every specialty, you know? And everybody's trying
Correct.
to do their
So
best for patients, but they only have one thing they do.
yes, that goes with other things as well.
Yeah.
My goal is, my consultations are like an hour long. I'm spending a lot of time trying to really evaluate the patient deeply, get an understanding of them clinically, their history. You learn a lot from a good history. You learn a lot from really studying a CBCT in detail and a really good clinical exam. So what I'm hoping to do is provide the surgery that I think is going to have the highest likelihood of curing a patient. My goal is always cure. Like
Okay.
nothing better
So
than
what's the definition of cure, right? Because I spend all this time talking to people about like this sure thing where they say if we manage to reduce the AHI by
50%.
half, then that's a great result. But you have all these patients who are going from 70 to 30 something, and they're really disappointed because they're still on CPAP and they still have severe sleep apnea. So, what do you mean by cure? You mean no other intervention
Correct.
necessary?
Correct.
Okay.
So in the literature, what you're talking about is referred to as success. So
Right.
success is 50% drop in the score.
Yeah.
Cure is getting them to not have sleep apnea anymore or
Okay.
not have UARS anymore. So in
So
general,
that's the standard you're going in with that you're trying to get
that's
to.
my goal. So everything I'm
Yeah.
doing in my career is trying to find ways to get people to cure more predictably and more often. All right. And the ways I'm doing that is number one, first of all, the MIND technique was one of those things. How I'm going about doing MMA surgery, doing things fully customized 3D printed titanium plates for the patients, getting more predictable, better results. I've developed interdisciplinary care protocol. I'm the first one to do that, where we're getting not just me and an orthodontist, but we're having myofunctional therapists, speech language pathologists that are all kind of getting together and all contributing something different, right? Because maybe on, after the surgery, there's still going to be tongue tone issues,
Yep.
breathing pattern issues, postural issues. Like the next thing I'm going to be doing is maybe trying to get in deeper into my postural understanding of things and learning how to work with postural therapists. But surgery is one piece, right? So all I'm trying to do is get as good of a result as I can by optimizing surgical outcomes, and that's trying to do doing MMA surgery is the most state of the art, best way I can, which we're doing here. And then having a team of providers that are all specialists in different things that all come together, and that's how you get from
That's
success
kind
rates.
of the key,
That's how you
right?
go from success rates to cure rates,
Right.
right? Or how you get cure rates to equal success rates is not just doing the surgery, bye-bye. It's like, okay, let's get a team of really competent people together. Now,
And I think sometimes laying out realistic like expectations for patients on what's involved, right? Like I think that sometimes people have this mindset of like, I just want to do a surgery as though it's just that one thing. So I think a lot of it is patient education around, well, this is what's possible with the surgery. For the best outcome, you're also going to have to invest your own time in myofunctional therapy and nutrition and all the, like all these other things that can
100%.
feed into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So my multidisciplinary care team, and now I call it an interdisciplinary care team because we're just working together. It's not just multi around each other. It's
Right.
together. It's me. It's obviously like the myofunctional therapist, speech language pathologist. We have a nutritionist. We have a pharmacist. We have the patients like the orthodontist, if we have an orthodontist on the case, and then their dentist, right? Because their dentist is going to be their quarterback. Good dentist is going to be the one that actually like diagnoses them first, like looks at their mouth and goes, "Hey, do you have sleeping issues?" I think like
Yeah.
sometimes a good dentist that's well educated will be the first person that screens and finds these people.
Yeah.
But yeah, and again, postural therapy is, I think, where I'm going next with that team that we're building. But yeah, so I think I skipped over your question. So you asked about when mind, when MMA.
Yes. And maybe it's completely like,
No,
your judgment and all of that, but just
so
for people
yeah, so
listening that are trying to figure it out.
yeah, so obviously, if I notice someone has like beautiful forward growth and just a super narrow maxilla, we're gonna go mind, right?
Right.
There are some patients that have a beautiful broad maxilla and palate, but they have stunted forward growth, right?
Yeah.
Narrow, small airway. You're thinking MMA, right? There's a lot of patients that have both. And the question becomes, well, do we want to do two operations? Or should we just do MMA? Because MMA is probably the most potent surgery to treating sleep apnea. It is the most potent surgery. But again, my philosophy is if you have both issues going on, then treating the transverse the best way that I know how, which is through the mind technique first, and then doing MMA is going to get you those cure rates that go way higher. So we have about four or five patients now that have gone through both, and all of them are cured so far. So that's kind of one of the things I'm really excited about in the future is publishing data on that. First, doing mind, getting that three-dimensional nasal maxillary expansion that you cannot get in MMA surgery, and doing MMA surgery. So purposefully doing both, right? So in some patients, we may first do mind and be like, hey, this may get you to cure, it may not. If not, we're going to do MMA. That'll get you there. For some patients, we purposefully go and like, we're going to do mind first, get all the amazing benefits we get from that we could never get from MMA surgery, and then we'll do MMA surgery. in a year,
And
you know.
so the MMA surgery, that's m more of a recovery, right? That's more major surgery than the mind technique.
Yeah, I
It's not
think
minimally invasive, right?
it's kind it's not it's it's definitely
Right.
more invasive than mind surgery.
Yeah.
I think it gets a bad reputation because of the way it's traditionally been done,
Yes.
and through the way it's maybe still being done, and patients sharing their photos on,
Oh, yeah.
blog posts, and they look like pumpkins with
Yeah.
coming out of
So
their
much
nose.
swelling.
I mean, like, for example, I did one on Thursday. So today's Saturday, right? So I did one on Thursday. I think it took 1 hour 45 minutes. The
The whole
patient,
MMA surgery took 1 hour and 45 minutes.
the patient's not wired shut, they're not rubber banded shut. They could open and close right away.
Wow.
Minimal swelling. The patient doesn't look like they had their face smashed. They don't have things coming out of their nose. They went home the next day, which is, it's like a 23-hour stay in a hospital
Yeah,
is
that's
pretty
kind of
great.
amazing.
Yeah, the recovery is just not that bad. That being said, I'm using, first of all, I've done a lot of them. I'm fellowship trained in doing corrective jaw surgery. So it's kind of my specialty. I'm good at it, I'm fast at it, I get great results. I'm also using the most state-of-the-art technology. Like I said, it's not
So
just
you can plan it out in 3D models where you can show people,
So
an idea of what it'll look like after.
something like
Yeah.
this, but it's not just virtual surgical planning, which is what everybody does,
Yeah.
right? Everybody hopefully is doing virtual surgical planning at the
We
very least.
hope, but
Okay, at the very least is
yeah.
planning the surgery on a virtual re rendering of the patient. But what we're also doing is fully custom surgery, which means 3D printed titanium plates for all the jaws, for the chin, everything. Why that is advantageous, first of all, it means that I'm recreating that virtual surgical plan down to the tenth of a millimeter, down to the tenth of a degree. It's a perfect, there otherwise nothing fits. Okay. So you're getting exact, like, I want to move this jaw 4 millimeters this way. I want to change this by 6 degrees. I want to move that over half a millimeter here. We're recreating that. So the aesthetic results are amazing. The airway results are amazing because I'm recreating the airway movements that I want by moving the jaws. And the surgery is a lot faster, like I said. So, that's pretty crazy speeds. Again, we're not doing it for speed, right?
Right.
We're I won't leave till it's perfect. If it takes
Right.
45 hours, I'll be in the OR for
Right, right,
45
right.
hours, no food, no drink, no bathroom, right? But at the end of the day, like, we're getting it done that fast. That just means less pain and swelling. The less time you're dissected and, things are being stretched out to do the operation, the less swollen you're going to get. It's like getting, and then these plates are very strong. They're a lot stronger than what we traditionally use when you're hand bending them in the OR. So, you don't need to wire people shut. You don't need to rubber band people shut, as long as you know what you're doing. So there's art to getting the patient on a workup to virtual surgical plan to getting everything to also be recreated in the OR the same way, right? And, it not everybody can do that. There's definitely other surgeons in the country that can, but there's definitely a handful of us that
Right.
have that
Yeah.
ability. So
Maybe if you want to speak to, like, is this ever covered by insurance? Like,
yeah.
or, yeah, it is.
So absolutely. MMA, we almost always get covered by insurance. It sometimes takes a fight.
Yeah.
I'd hate to tell you, probably the best part of my job is, talking to patients after they've recovered and hearing the changes they've had, and
And the worst part is
having that
insurance.
connection with them. The worst part of my job is dealing with insurance company.
It's just
So,
terrible.
obviously some patients, we don't have an issue. There's no fight. We submit things, it gets approved right away. For some patients, we have to send appeals, I have to do peer to peers. You name it. But, we take great pride. I think we have probably the highest acceptance rates, I would imagine, about as high as it gets, because I have a team of people working to
To
do
work
that,
on it, yeah.
and then I'm a fighter. So I feel like once I write a letter and speak to someone over the phone through a peer-to-peer or something, it's pretty hard, rare that they still say no. I think I'm good at making a compelling argument as to why this surgery is beneficial for the patient. With MIND, it's not as often covered.
Right. But the
It's
overall expense, I'm thinking, is lower just because you can sometimes do it in office and
yeah, so it's a lot more affordable, again, because we can do it in office.
so if people are interested in working with you, like you work with people that you don't necessarily have to be in California, right? So people
No.
can fly in from different places and different countries and
Yes, so I'm lucky that most of my practice, most of my patients come from out of town. So we have a great infrastructure in place to deal with patients that
accommodate
come from,
that,
yeah,
yeah.
like this week we did someone from Japan, which is probably the farthest.
I mean,
Japan's
that's pretty far, yeah.
pretty far. So we have the whole infrastructure in place.
So,
We
for somebody coming from Japan, are they doing sort of discussion and diagnosis and plan of what you're going to do? Are you doing that remotely and then they actually come for the surgery, or do they have
Yes.
to come and
So
a
for
few
most pa
times?
so for most pa out of town patients, we can definitely start the conversation with an easy Zoom, right? So as long as I have a CBCT scan
Yeah.
and I have good intraoral photos, or what we call intraoral scan, which is like what you would get, when you're getting Invisalign, like a
Yeah,
3D
yeah,
scan of the teeth, I can get a pretty good idea of what's going on, right? What their bone is look like, what their bone look, what their jaws are shaped like, how
yeah.
big they are, the health of their gums, the health of their teeth. Like you can get a pretty good idea. So a lot of the time we can kind of, especially for mind surgery, we can do enough of the workup away where I can meet them here almost right before their surgery. For MMA patients that are coming from out of town, at the very least, I'll need to see them about 1 month before the operation in person.
Yes.
And that's because, again, because I'm doing everything fully custom, and I want to make sure I can't trust anyone else to take the CBCT scan in the specific protocol and jaw position that I like it in, to
Yeah.
make sure that when we go to sleep, everything fits like a puzzle piece, right? So, for
Right
those
on.
patients, they have to come at least a month before, and then they usually come and stay for a couple weeks after.
Right on. So I'm going to link everything in the show notes, but do you want to just tell people where they can find you and where they can find more information?
Yes, so my practice is called Breathe Max. We're at the Breathe Institute in Los Angeles, California. We are a multi-specialty practice that really focuses on people with sleep-related breathing disorders, from anything from mouth breathing to insomnia to UARS to sleep apnea. We're a heavy research institution. We are constantly working on research, which is pretty unusual for a private practice, but that's our passion, our goal, and trying to keep things super state of the art, minimally invasive and maximally effective, right? If you guys want to find me, I am on Instagram at Dr. Coppelson. So that's DrCoppelson. My website is also drcoppelson.com. And thank you all for listening. I'd love to chat again one day. Maybe the next
Sounds
time we have a
great.
paper out, you can invite me again and we can keep the
Sounds
conversation.
really good. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Emma. Nice to meet you.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, you can always reach me on Instagram. My handle there is @sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience to find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.